Live from Nicoll Hall, Loma Linda University School of Public Health, this is Don't Fear the Career. We hope this podcast will help bring you critical information on career development and tips and best writing practices as a graduate student. We also hope to give you a few laughs. Whatever platform you get this podcast on, please remember to give us a thumbs up, 5 stars, and comment. So now just sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hi, everyone. This is Don't Fear the Career. The date is June 22nd, 2018. Oh, my gosh.
I know. It's crazy.
It's already.
It's insane. Time and the way it marches forward, it's scary.
Yeah, it is. So we are your co-hosts. I'm actually kind of a producer.
She is the producer.
And this is the talent.
I'm the talent.
The piece de resistance, lady of the hour. Woo-hoo. The proprietress of the Writing and Career Services office.
Yes,
that's me. Molly Doherty.
That's me.
I actually said your name right.
So excited.
So who are you?
For
people who have never listened to this podcast.
Oh, God, really? Who could that be? I mean, who in the world has not already heard this? I have no idea.
Besides the three people who
I know, I'm so embarrassed for them. Okay, well, who I am is the person who sort of is the one fraction of the 1.5 people who typically work in that office. And helping people with their career concerns, of which there are many, and writing concerns, which, as much as I love that, I don't get to do it as much as I would like, because everyone and their brother seems to be the most concerned about their career. And you know, and I'm not laughing at that, because it's super important and super scary. So, but we're not going to fear the career. We're gonna embrace it, and we're going to make it ours. So, yeah, so that's primarily what I do, I feel.
Cool. Thank you. In this week's episode, we're going to be talking about resumes. Womp, womp, womp.
Womp, womp.
Resumes are something that are truly terrifying as a student. And I think even just as a person in, you know, a career.
Barf worthy.
And, you know, we're really going to be talking about this first step into introspection and how this is the first step into things like portfolios, statements, cover letters, all the things that go into creating your narrative.
Your career narrative, yes.
Your career narrative. So that's what we're going to be talking about. We'll begin with a knowledge nugget. Then we're going to go into our deep dive segment. And then we'll finish off this week with a book of the week, which is going to be really entertaining.
Woo-hoo!
We have a very, very good book selection for you this
week.
Yeah,
I love that book.
So please sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. So, this section is called Knowledge Nuggets.
Yay!
If you haven't listened to our first episode, please go do that, because that's when we first named this section.
Mm-hmm.
And this section really is to go ahead and give people the bite-sized knowledge nuggets that you would get in if you were to go into Molly's office mm-hmm. and talk about something. And I learned about this probably one of the first times I went in to talk to you, is the one-page rule.
Yes, the nefarious, the infamous one-page rule.
What is that?
Turn away from the one-page rule. Okay, the one-page rule is something that happened, I don't know, back in the mists of time, probably somewhere in the mid-50s, who knows, in which somebody said you have to write your resume so that it fits into one page.
Wait, but you don't have to?
No,
you don't
you
have
really
to put
don't.
All my Ugh. Years of work, like no. I have so many years of work.
Yeah,
but
exactly. Or me, can you imagine me, as old as I am, trying to get everything onto one page? Oh my God.
But I've heard people say that you just got to have one page and it has to be beautiful.
Yeah, well, you know, who are these people? And why are we listening to them is my question. I mean, any random person can say anything they want, including me, like me right now, telling you this. But almost no one these days will expect you to write a one-page resume. In fact, often you're uploading your resume, often as a digital file through a portal or whatever, so it's not even going to look in a typical manner like it's really a page of written text. So that's not necessary. But also, even if that were the rule, rules are made to be broken when they're stupid.
Mm.
And if people are, in order to, and I've seen both of these things happen with the students who come to see me, they either leave something off that turns out to have been kind of great, or at least something that helped give you a good idea of what their skills were, et cetera. And they had to leave it off because I have to fit it all in one page. And I'm like, oh my God, never leave off experience. Or they got it all in there. And how did they do this? You can only imagine. 8-point type and a 1/2-inch margin. And there's no space between the lines and you could just die from it. I mean, if I'm a hiring manager, I'm thinking, who is this person who's trying to make me go blind? You know, and I'm going to throw their resume into the trash because no. So it just doesn't make sense. And anybody who's going to be, frankly, that, I think, rigid and say, well, I really believe that you should only have one page. I'm thinking, I don't want to work for that person because I want to be able to tell my story. Now, that said, at this stage in the game, someone like you, Ms. Montoya, might not necessarily have more than maybe like a page and a half. Who knows? And then the flip side of that is that if you have one page, you can go up to two. And I have heard that some people, if you've really been in the game for a long time, maybe three, but generally it's good to have a 2-page resume, no more than anyway, in which case you're kind of, you know, you're also having kind of like a time period in which you're choosing, you know, like the last 10 years of your you know, career or whatever. But this isn't necessarily applicable to students who are just coming out the gate. So if you have some great projects you did that were school related or some massive, you know, volunteer gig that you did that was
Peace Corps
and your field practicum and things that I know can be very, very detailed and have products associated with them and all kinds of things, you don't want to leave anything out that's going to help show, hey, I evaluated this whole thing here, or my field practicum, it lasted almost a year. I mean, that's a long time. Some of the field practicums do last that long. So you don't want to cut it off. But that said, do not pad it. Don't say, oh, I've got to make it 2 pages. No, because that's just as silly as making it only one.
So don't make it an arbitrary number.
No arbitrary number.
There is no arbitrary number.
Well, it's kind of arbitrary, no more than two.
But everything has to have a purpose.
Yes. And the purpose is you just don't want to overload people with too much info. But just don't ever just go, oh, I have to, and I have to leave out a great thing, or I have to make it so small that it all fits. I've seen both those things, and it's always a calamity.
Okay. So what I'm getting is the one-page rule is false.
I think the one-page rule, I believe, is false and wrong-headed.
Okay. That is your knowledge nugget of the day.
That's it.
Moving on to our next segment. So we've named this segment Deep Dive. And so every week we're going to be deep diving into a career development topic that either is very scary or is very daunting for a lot of students and something that frankly a lot of students come into Molly asking for help with. And this week we're, like I said before, we're going to be talking about resumes. So where do we even begin, Molly? Molly, this topic is huge.
This really is
like, you could take a whole course.
Yeah.
A whole course in resumes. So why don't you tell me what a resume is?
Well, a resume is this nice, no more than 2-page.
Arbitrary.
little document that purports anyway to kind of sum up the work experience or relevant experience for your chosen field in order to get you a job, at least to get your foot in the door so they can talk to you. You know, it's going to be one of many little keys that's going to try and open that door. It's not going to necessarily keep you from getting a job. It's certainly not going to get you the job all on its own. There's a lot of other steps to it. But it's the probably the most serious and kind of practical and on the page, like, okay, I worked here from this time to this time, and I had to do this, this, and this. And, you know, and that's just very, there's a word I'm looking for that I kind of can't, you know, grab hold of right now, quotidian somewhat, just very practical, you know, soup to nuts, this is what I did. And so who can argue with that? It's real basic, right?
Okay. And I think you mentioned before, when we've had some conversation, that this is one part of the three-legged stool you like to talk about. Can you explain a little bit about
that? Sometimes there's four legs, but yeah, I think for most people, it's going to be three legs.
A tripod.
So I think sometimes of everything is being the three-legged stool because you have your basic document and it has all of your info on it, as much of it as you can fit on there, and you know, and describe well. You're going to describe everything very well, and that's when I was supposed to, I'll talk to you guys about how to do that. That's in another segment about how to, you know, describe things well. But your resume is going to be your very, you know, businesslike, you know, part of your stool. And it's going to have just your basic facts, facts, facts. And then you're going to, and then the next part of your stool is your cover letter. And the cover letter is going to be things, you're going to talk in your cover letter a little bit about some great experience that you had that you can find in your resume, but it is not never a rehash of what your resume is. And I see people do this a lot. They'll take stuff from the resume and they'll say, hi, my name is so-and-so and I want to work, you know, and I'm interested in this position, and they're, and be very specific about the position that you want, because often there's, you know, reasons for them being called what they're called, and there might be more than one position they're hiring for. And then you, then you talk about, you know, I feel I would be good for this position because I have this experience, and here's an example of the experience I have, and this is what I did, and I learned a great deal or whatever. But you don't just say, oh, and then and from 19, you know, from well, 19, listen to me how old I am, from
1980.
I know, from 1980 to 1982, I was doing this. No, so from 2015 to 2017, I worked there. It's like, well, they can find that on your resume, so why are you wasting my time?
Okay, so you it's a completely different
piece. However, you're going to look at your resume and you're going to, and you know which is your favorite job or your favorite project or whatever it was that you worked on, something that was just great that you're really proud of. And so think about that and think about how it relates to the job. Hopefully you're not applying for something for which you are completely unqualified or is completely outside of your education and experience.
I think we'll get into, we'll really deep dive into what a cover letter is.
At another point,
but those are some great knowledge nuggets.
And then nuggets.
What's the last part of the stool?
The interview.
Okay.
So.
Oh gosh, I just broke out into a cold sweat.
Oh, I know. God, it's the worst, and I still do, and I'm so old, and it's just the worst. But yeah,
your skin's looking great.
My skin is looking great. I got a peel. It was great. So, anyway, no, but so for the three legs, so we got your resume, your nice basic business-like document, then you have your cover letter, in which you maybe expand a little bit on some great experience and introduce yourself as an interesting, experienced person who is going to solve the problem that hiring manager has, which is they need somebody for that job, and you are that person. And then the third part is hopefully something from your resume will make a good anecdote or talking point in your interview.
Molly, it sounds like to me there is a theme.
It's
almost like they're connected by threads.
And what do you do with threads? You weave them. You weave them into things.
Wow.
I know.
What a concept.
The tapestry of your career.
Wow.
I know.
So tell me about, if I was to come into your office and I said, I need to write a resume, what would be your first step for me? What would be step one in trying to get this whole thing off the ground?
Well, generally people come to me and they have something. They've already had
My name.
You have your name.
And my address and my email.
Well,
and
you're just being so difficult, Danielle, already. So I don't really know what to say.
We had a name for me last episode. I was
lazy student.
Lazy student.
You were lazy student.
I know.
But now you're lazy graduate.
I'm lazy graduate. So lazy student.
Okay, so lazy student, say you've never written a resume before. In some ways, this is good, and in other ways, it's not so great. But hey, we're going to make it work. So first of all, your name is important. Your address, not so much, because it's nobody's business where you live. Also, that's anymore in these days, it's an identity, safety issue as well. You just don't want everybody knowing all that stuff. But basically, I would have you start off with the business-like details of what happened. And so give me, you know, your education. And give me your experience, such as it is, everything you can think of.
Everything?
Everything.
What about that time I volunteered in Nicaragua?
Yes.
For like a week.
Do all of that, because, and this is the other thing that
what
I tell
people.
What
about when I worked at Burger King?
Everything. For this purpose, we're just going to do what I like to call write big.
Oh.
You're going to write big. You're going to put everything in there, because I don't want you deciding for yourself at this point, because you're very vulnerable right now, what is good or what is bad. It's like, let's just see where it all fits.
Okay.
Because we're not sure right now, right? And so write it all down, and I'm going to give you a little bit of time to do that, and you'll come back later and see me. And then, of course, then things get really ugly, and then there's like blood on the walls, because I'm going, oh, that's terrible. No, I'm not doing that. I don't ever do that. But then I'll look at it, and I'll go, Okay, and this happens to me really every time. I find myself, and this is a huge part of my job, I feel, almost as interviewing the students about their experience, even when I have the resume in my hand. There'll be kind of maybe an interesting thing. Oh, this is, you work for so-and-so. Well, that is interesting. Well, what did you do there? Because sometimes I can't really quite tell. They'll say they assisted somebody or they facilitated in the development of a this or a that, and I'm like, oh my God, what does that even mean?
I've seen this. I've seen Molly do this personally. It's almost as if she's pulling it out of
them. I have a physical feeling sometimes, a sensation of pulling.
Yeah, and you see people sitting there and you ask them, so what did you do there? I did a nutrition program.
Yeah.
And why is that not okay, just to be very vague?
Because you want people to know. I mean, why is it not good to be vague? It's never good to be vague. People want details. And if you can give them these hiring managers who live on top of Mount whatever, and they zip and they decide who's going to get a job and who isn't, they need specifics about what you've done. So if they would tell me, and this would be like, you know, lazy student, there you are, you're there with me, and I did an education program. And my questions would be, for whom did you do this education program? Mm-hmm. How long did you do it? What form did it take? Did you write it yourself, or did you use somebody else's material as a basis? Were you traveling all around and seeing a bunch of little kids and teaching them, you know, how important it is to eat carrots? You know, what were you doing?
So you want me to word vomit?
I want you to word vomit.
You want me to write big? Just write everything I can say about every experience.
Yep. And also, it can be ugly. I mean, you don't have to be thinking, oh, but my resume, it's going to be more than 2 pages. Or, oh, this is ugly right now. No, if anything, what I really like people to do is to sit with a yellow pad or a computer or whatever you want to do, talking to a recorder or whatever, and just talk about what your typical day was at that job. Mm. Okay, well, I used to do this. Oh, well, what was involved in that? This is always how I find out the most amazing things.
Okay.
I just ask people stuff and I go, oh, really? Well, so what would happen when you do that? Oh, well, then I got to do this. Oh my God, why isn't that on your resume?
So do you think it would be good to talk to someone about what you did?
Yeah, I think so. I think either talk to somebody or interview yourself if you can.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I have kind of like these little sort of self-interview questions that I've come up with recently.
Would you say you have a kit?
I have a kit that I'm working on. It's not yet complete, but I'm hoping to have this little kit thing soon.
So I can interview myself and I don't have to talk to anyone?
Well, you know, that sounds a little lonely, but yeah. I mean, you could do that, but it's... And the thing is, I don't know. I'm struggling here because I think it's kind of good to do it by yourself in the sense that you don't have any concerns about, oh, somebody's going to laugh at me, or somebody's not going to understand what I mean, or, oh, well, if I do this with my mom, she doesn't understand what a process evaluation is, so then I'm going to have to explain that to her. And no. So maybe just spend some time with you, yourself, and I, or you, yourself, and you, rather, sorry, and maybe with a candle burning or not, I don't know, and have some nice music playing and just kind of like, you know, kind of go through your day. Right now, you can't see this, but I'm closing my eyes and I'm like, what is my day like? What do I typically do? Okay. And how do I go about it? What do I have to do? What skills do I need? This is the next step. What skills do I need in order to do that work?
Okay.
And that is a really good thing for the hiring manager to know.
So what I'm getting from you is, are the people that we're writing this for specifically is the hiring manager. They are our audience.
They are your audience, and it's always good to keep in mind your audience. And yes, the hiring manager is, but ultimately and more importantly, it belongs to you and it's for you.
Okay.
And I really think that's important.
It's two.
I think every writer of a novel or nonfiction or whatever, they have an audience in mind, but they're also writing for themselves.
Okay.
And so you should write for yourself, but with the idea that someone else will be reading it. Okay. And they don't know all the things that you know. So
what do you mean they can't read my mind?
I know, it's crazy, right? So they're not in your brain with you. And you're the only one in there.
So what does that mean?
I hope. Anyway. What does that mean?
You have to tell them everything.
You have to tell them everything. And then later, if you're concerned about how much detail to include or whatever, then you can make that decision. But first you have to have a decision to make, right?
And you have to write big.
You have to write big. And here's another, and I have so many metaphors. It's crazy. It's Molly's house of metaphors. But I'm always...
House of horrors.
No, that's terrible. No, but I used to have, there's this one student I work with, and she'd be like, oh, Molly, is this another metaphor? I'm like, yes, it's yet another one. So I had like 10 I was working on with her. But basically, write big. Think of your resume and really anything you're writing as like a giant hedge. Okay. And it's kind of wild and woolly, and as you know, you got branches sticking out, and so it's all over here and all over there. And little by little, you're going to start getting your little clippers out, and you're going to start shaping that hitch.
Whittling it
up. Uh-huh. And it might end up with a lovely topiary, looks like Mickey Mouse or something.
Ooh.
Or it might just be a nice shaped, solid little round thing. But you have made it what it is. But first, you have to have the basic raw material. So that you can understand what is good to keep and what is good to
discard.
It's
like a beard.
It's kind of like a beard.
Like men grow out their beard and they grow it really full so that when they grow it out for a year. You're not supposed to cut it for for a whole year.
Oh, Lord.
You're not supposed to touch it. And then finally after a year, you can finally probably shape it because you finally have that fullness.
I think I like the hedge analogy better. But hey, you know, whatever works for you.
We have some male listeners that may or may not be able to grow a beard.
Oh, that's true. Beards. Okay, it's all about the beard gel. Okay, forget the hedge. But the thing is, you do have to have that raw material first. Okay. So once you've got the raw material, then you can make decisions. And then if you're not sure, sometimes, you know, you got so much, it's like, God, I can't make this decision. Then you can ask your friends or you can come by and see me. And then I'll say, you know, honey, I don't really think you need to put Burger King on there because you've got some other good experience.
All right, so I've ridden big.
You've ridden big.
And what do I do now?
Mm-hmm.
I've ridden big. I've thrown spaghetti at a wall.
That's the other good analogy. So what now? You're going to start shaping your hedge.
How do I do that?
You're going to, it's kind of this idea of, this is part of your career narrative and it's an important part. And in the process of doing this, it's going to help you with your summary, which is an important part of your resume, which we're going to discuss in another time. And an elevator pitch, which is another great thing to have in your little tool belt that you carry around, like Batman has his utility belt.
Of knowledge nuggets.
Exactly. You're going to have your utility belt of knowledge nuggets that you're going to be ready to deploy at any time. So you have this great big hedge or whatever it is. And you've written big, it's all over. And so now you're going to start kind of reading it over. And if you can do this, kind of distance yourself a little bit, and kind of look at it and go, okay, so when I did, well, here's an example I used recently with somebody. Somebody was, a friend of mine used to be a ward clerk at the hospital when she was going to school. And it was just like, it was the communication hub. There were a million things going on. And so, she had her different pieces of the job that she had to do. So for each one of those things, I used it as an example. So say this person was the communication hub. You're getting information for the doctors. You're getting information for the patients. Maybe you're getting test results, lab results, and then you've got all these other relationships and things that you're trying to manage. And then you probably have, you know, you have all the shift information for what nurses, and then also maybe which patients are with which nurses and which doctors, et cetera. So all of this is information that you're keeping. So I started using this as an example. Okay, so this person, for them to succeed at this job, and this person did, you would have to be really good at handling information and data in an accurate way.
Okay.
You'd have to be efficient in the way you communicate with people.
Okay.
You would have to be, you'd have to have some good networks, and so be able to collaborate with others well.
Okay.
Because you're working with people from all over the hospital. They're coming in there like, oh, we have to take this patient down to x-ray. And so the transportation people are there. You're not going to be mean to the transportation people. So you're going to say, hey, yeah, he's in room 21A, that first bed, and I'll follow you down there or whatever. I don't know. But anyway, so all of these things. So these start turning into qualities.
Okay. So
qualities. This is how, if you had to describe yourself or if somebody were to describe you, and this is helpful if you have a friend who can do that for you, because you're never going to describe yourself the way a friend would. And it's kind of sweet, actually. You get some good information that way, but you could say, okay, I had to accurately, efficiently, and collaboratively work in a high pressure environment because a busy, you know, hospital floor is going to be a high pressure environment. So those are things you can put like in your summary as a quality that you have. If you are proud of the way you can handle a million different inputs from all these different places, from you know, the phone and the computer, and say you're really good with a computer or whatever, like you're good at data analysis or whatever, all of this stuff, you start going, okay, well, data analysis, that's a hard skill.
Mm-hmm.
That's a concrete skill. But then there's the ability to interact well with people. And so that is a soft skill, but it's an important one. So you find that on your resume someplace. And this is a key. Don't ever claim something for yourself for your summary or for your cover letter or anywhere on your resume, anywhere that you cannot instantly point to. So if I'm looking at your resume, and I had this happen with a student once, and I said, oh, well, that's really cool. You have leadership experience? Where was that? Because I don't remember seeing it. And I was kind of troubled that I hadn't seen it on the resume. I thought maybe I wasn't paying attention. And she said, oh, no, I don't really have that. And I said, yeah, I'm not seeing it anywhere. She says, well, but they really like to see that. Like, well, but you, in point of fact, do not have it. Mm-hmm. And so if they were to ask you, like I just did, oh, well, tell me about your leadership experience, and you had nothing to say, isn't that going to be an embarrassing, awkward moment?
So what I'm getting from all this is that the second step of the resume process is to really codify all of the different experience and to give them names, to say mm-hmm. that in your experience, you know, all of these different experience, I had these different qualities mm-hmm. or skills, and you need to start being able to
put names to them.
Yes. And you put names in the summary and mm-hmm. in your skills. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm gathering.
And then also, and again, this goes to your stool. So then keeping in mind that some of these things might translate well in your interview, for instance.
Okay.
And so, and in your elevator pitch, were you to find yourself stuck on an elevator with Bill Gates someday, you could describe yourself as somebody, well, I'm someone who, I really pride myself on the accuracy of my work and the, you know, and, you know, whatever it is. So you start with your accuracy. I really like that because it's so important. Or I'm very, everybody says they're detail oriented. You know, it's like a big thing. Everybody says it, right? I don't really know that everybody who says it really is detail oriented, but if you were to put that on your resume and somebody were to ask you, well, what sort of very fine detailed work did you have to do? Oh, well, that was in my job for fill in the blank. And I can prove that, not necessarily that you need to prove it like it's a legal document, but you're going, I can point to instances in which I had a very sensitive document I was working mm-hmm. on, and I had to be very careful, and I had to analyze it well, and I had to be very accurate in the way I did it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was looking at for details as small as a comma. Okay. If it was misplaced. So that sort of thing. Be able to speak to everything you put on your resume.
So if I said I did GIS, where did I do that? If I said I exactly. was a leader, where did I do that?
Exactly.
Or if I said I was an excellent writer.
Yes. And please don't say that either unless you really can claim it, because you know what? It's worth a lot. I'm not going to lie, and I'm not going to say that just because, you know, I value writing, and I think writing is important, but I mean, it's something a lot of people value, and yet it's something maybe they value it more because they don't see a lot of people who can do it that well. Mm. Another student once described herself in the same way, that she was an excellent writer and da 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 da, and also she said presentations too, which she happened to be great at. She's great at it. But even though she was working very hard on her writing, and I had seen the progress that she'd made. I mean, I could see for myself that she had gotten better and she was taking it very seriously. I still told her, I wouldn't put that in your summary, honey. And I wouldn't lead with that in any way, shape, or form, because it's not your greatest strength. It's something that's going to, I think, be a solid little part of your toolkit, but it's not quite where you are quite yet. But you know what you are? You're great in a room and you're great on an individual basis and you're great with large groups of people, and you can talk to anybody. She could.
Okay.
You know, what's that old expression? She could sell sour milk to cows, you know? In a slick way, but I mean, she just knew how to just engage with people and get them to trust her and like her. It was great. And that's also a very valued skill.
So that's good to know. So you have to, you know about these valued skills and kind of be, this sounds so introspective. This sounds more in depth than those quizzes on BuzzFeed.
Oh, Lord.
No, it really does. It sounds like...
It's a process. And the thing is, it's not something that you're just doing for a particular job, for this particular job or whatever. I mean, the way I take it, the way I try to get people to see it is that this is something that, this is a technique, this is a formula, really, that you can apply for the rest of your life. Yeah. That, you know, every few years or however, you know, I mean, you hear different things about how often you should update your resume. But every time you update your resume, you should take like this little introspective, like walk down memory lane and think about the work that you did at that particular place, what you were proud of. Also, and this goes into another thing, those self-interview questions I was telling you about that I've written, is like, what were you proud of? What were you not so proud of? What was a mistake that you made? Some of the stuff you might share with people, and some of it you might not. It might just be, you know, information that you lock away in the inner recesses of your brain. But some of it can be really good, because, you know, one of those crazy questions that you get sometimes from interviewers is, well, describe a situation in which you
failed.
Made a mistake, you failed.
I had that question come up.
And you did a good job with that, if I recall.
I did. And that was because I was introspective.
Right.
Kind of, after you do this process, it's almost like you have those questions.
You have the answers.
You have those answers on the back burner. Like I have answers to all of those questions now in my toolbox.
And that's it. And it's part of self-knowledge if you want to get like all, you know, like hippy dippy, granola chippy about it. But yeah, I mean, once you will be able to really just speak to anyone. And so it's a way of sort of becoming kind of, I don't know, relaxed and sort of at ease with yourself a little bit, which is certainly a work in progress, and we're all trying, mm-hmm. you know, that our whole lives trying to, you know, be good to ourselves and relaxed and comfortable with ourselves. But I mean, it's certainly a way to start thinking about who you are as a professional and the kind of job you want and the kind of work you want to do and the kind of work you've done. And you can point to with pride and say, I'm really proud of this one thing I did. You know, I mean, I've worked on a ton of grants and not a lot of them. They haven't always gotten funded. Let's just put it that way. Even though I knew that there were ones that were so good, and I can still look at them with pride and say, you know, if that agency hadn't run out of money, we would have gotten funded, you know? So, I mean, these are things to think about, so.
And so you mentioned before that this is the very matter of fact, you know, part of the stool. You know,
it really is. This is the stool, and this is the stool that most people feel the most comfortable with on some level. Mm-hmm. And that they feel is essentially easy, maybe, because they read things on the internet and they think it's just a matter of using a bunch of buzzwords and lots of, you know, multisyllabics and lots of things like facilitated the development of a business plan for the da-da-da-da-da, and it's just like, I'm already asleep, you know? Okay. So, you know, we can get granular about the words that we use and how to make things more interesting.
I feel like that's on our nuts and bolts.
That's episode. A nuts and bolts thing. Well, actually, that's in the experience thing, but how you describe things is really important. Okay. But yeah, but what was that again? I just lost the thread.
You lost the thread.
I lost the
thread. No, I was asking about, I really want to get to the point of this being the very straightforward part of the stool.
It's very practical and it's very utilitarian.
And we were just talking about how you had to be so introspective, but you can be very straightforward about your experience.
You can. And the thing is, so while you're making this very straightforward, practical, and useful document, you can also use it as an opportunity to be introspective and to think about your qualities and to think about your likes and dislikes. Yes. Also, even think about the kind of job you want, as frighteningly crazy as that sounds. I mean, you can think about what you actually like doing.
Wow. And so you're starting to really create the narrative at this mm-hmm. point. So you're already doing it.
Right. So here's one that I use for myself. I've had a hard time, you know, I used to have a hard time describing to people what I've done over the years. I've had all these different jobs. And finally, I came up with one. And I really think it is me. It's, I'm an information synthesizer.
Oh,
I know. I kind of made that up.
And that's something you would describe yourself
as. That's how I would describe myself on an elevator with Bill Gates.
On your resume?
Yes.
On your cover letter?
Yeah.
Wow.
I probably would. Because what that says to me is, because I used to be in newspapers, okay. and I've written grants, and I've done this job, you know. I mean, I've done a lot of things. I was in marketing. So I'm good at taking information and making it palatable and understandable to other people.
Okay. And so that describes you well. Mm-hmm. So maybe coming up with descriptors mm-hmm. that really are true about
yes.
you,
yes.
that you can point to in your resume, mm-hmm. that you can describe in an interview. Mm-hmm. So creating those is probably a big part of this.
Right. And so even though I have information synthesizer and it's two words and it's not especially easy to say, I would then, you know, follow up with some good examples of how I'm an information synthesizer. See? Synthesizer. I can't say it. I can't say synthesizer.
Okay. So this next part I wanted to talk about, we're still in the deep dive.
Diving deep.
You were mentioning some keywords that you did not want me to forget.
Oh, Lord.
And one was word, real estate, and budget.
Oh, yes. And so this kind of goes a little bit to what we were talking earlier on the nugget about, you know, the one-page rule. But I want people to look at their resume as if it were a piece of highly expensive real estate. Okay.
Oh, really?
We all know how expensive real estate is. So basically, you want every single thing in your resume to be working hard for you. And you want every little word, every bullet point, every element that's in there to have a very specific purpose, to not be filler, not be fluff. You can't afford filler or fluff.
This sounds like, you know, kind of hedging it down, you know.
Oh, yes.
Putting down that hedge to make it.
You are trimming your hedge, and you're doing it because this space, there's so many things to go into this thing that in addition to the information that you're going to be giving people, you also want to give them a little place for their eye to rest, as they say. So you're going to want some white space, and you're going to want to make it easy to read. And so if you're just jam-packing it with a lot of things that maybe are kind of fluffy or not that descriptive, then you're going to be wasting everybody's time.
Okay.
So there's your real estate aspect. And then your word budget, another way of thinking of it is that every word has a dollar value. And again, you're a little tight on funds.
Okay.
So your budget is kind of small and you want every single word. So try to stay away from things like the student I was working with the other day, and she made me so happy because she's a nutrition student, and she went, she was saying nutrition. We're just trying to like cut this one word because we needed it to fit on a line. And that's part of the real estate issue is that you don't want to have like one word stuck on one otherwise blank space, because that's a waste of your space. So you either cut it so that you can rewrite it so that it'll all fit in two lines instead of three, or you fill out that third line with something valuable, because remember, this is your very expensive real estate. But so she had, and what was pushing it over into three lines was nutrition based, and I hadn't seen that because I hate stuff like that. It's just not good. And she went, well, should I just say maybe just nutrition instead of nutrition based? I'm like, oh, I love you. Yes, that's exactly it. And then it fit. And then we're at two lines instead of three, instead of one little teeny tiny sad word.
Well, what does one line matter?
Because that's a little bit more white space you can give, or that's a little bit more room for your own narrative, for another great thing in which you're describing something well. So
you want to just jam pack this
with well-chosen descriptive phrases and numbers if you have them.
Numbers? What do you mean by numbers?
If you can assign metrics
metrics.
I know, metrics are numbers, and it's a way of quantifying, for all of you epidemiologists out there, it's a way of quantifying your achievements if you can. Now granted, not everybody's achievements can be quantified in quite that way, but a lot of people's can. So say, as a for instance, you are a say you've done a bunch of focus groups or whatever.
Okay.
You're going to say how many focus groups you did. If you did, you know, more than one or two. Okay, because you wanted to be impressive.
Like 20.
Yeah, if you did like 20 or even four or five, and you could say, yeah, we did a series of five, you know, focus groups with, you know, 8 to 10 participants in each, and then I had to write the code book,
mm-hmm.
and then I had to look for emerging themes, and then I had to write a report, and then I had to submit it, and all that. Those are all steps. Those are all hardcore, real, crunchy details that you can give people.
And
you can
deliverables.
Show them, you know, deliverables, and you know, and how many things you've done. So if you've gone out and say you had to do educational seminars to a bunch of fourth and fifth graders, you would want to try to, if you could, as well as you can, think of how many fourth and fifth graders you gave your little speech to.
Wow, so you're saying that I not only have to be descriptive, but I have to be exact.
You have to be descriptive, you have to be exact, you have to be deep, you have to be introspective. There's so many different parts of yourself that you sort of get in touch with while you're doing your resume.
So I have to, that's a good thing to note, that not only do you have to describe well what you did, you know, with keywords, with those, you know, flashy keywords, and, you know, like, I did this, this, and this, but you want to give a base for that. You want to give, you know,
If you can, you want to give context to what you did. And again, not everybody's work necessarily lends itself to numbers. But there are other ways of describing your achievements and your accomplishments along the way, and you just have to be a little more creative, because people really do like numbers, I'm not going to lie, okay? So if you can point to something, I did that 58 times, like, that's impressive, you know, but if you're in the business world, it's like, oh, well, I decreased our budget. You know, I saved I got 10% off of our budget just through you know, looking for waste or inefficiency or whatever. And that's something that people really like to see. So keeping that in mind, even if you're not doing numbers, think about that level of detail and that level of specificity if you can.
All right. Are there any other tidbits that you want to include in this part one of the resume? We're kind of coming to the close of this segment. Is there anything you had in your notes that you wanted to bring up before we end with this segment?
I'm looking at my notes. I don't know if you can hear the paper ruffling here. Ruffle, 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 ruffle. Here it is. And I sometimes, I always try to remember to say those first, and it never works. It's usually I'm halfway through, and then I stop and go, wait a minute, this is what I'm supposed to say at the very beginning. Okay, so this is what I'm going to say at the end. This is your resume, and you need to own it. You need to make it your own. And that means also that you're making decisions about things, and you're deciding what you like and what you don't like. That said, and this is a big caveat, okay, I don't think you should just sort of randomly say, well, I would really like my resume to be on polka dotted paper. No, that's insane. So no. So what you should do, I would recommend, is learning as much as you can. Listen to me, listen to other people, but really just listen to me, because you know I'm the best. But and read things, keeping in mind that anybody can print anything on the internet that they want to. So read from a variety of sources so that you're hearing things. If you start hearing advice that you're hearing from two or three other places or along those same lines, you go, okay, this sounds like good stuff. Just start, but start making decisions for yourself. Like, I really would like everything to be centered, or I would really like, you know, the bullets to look like this, or I feel strongly about using, you know, whatever it is, but try to make it so that it's yours. And so you can both not, you're not trying just to please other people. You're trying to please yourself. Remember, you have your audience and your own. You're also part of your audience. But start, you know, developing a sensibility about what, how you want this thing to look and how you want it to represent you, because it's going to represent you. And it's part of also the responsibility that comes with being a professional in this world. And also, and this might sound, I don't know how this sounds, but also you can't blame anybody. Oh, well, I did this thing on the internet somebody told me to do, and that's why I didn't get the job. No, honey, that's not why you didn't get the job. You never don't get a job just from like a goofy mistake on a resume. People have even gotten jobs with a goofy mistake on their resume because they saw enough other good stuff in there. Well, let's bring this person in and talk to them and see. Okay. But start feeling like you own this and push back a little bit. And I do this with the students in my office. I'll be like, well, what do you think about that? Do you like that? Does that sound good to you? Or what do you think about the look of that? And they'll be like, I like that. Yeah, I like that. So at first you might not even know what you like because you haven't done this before, but over time you will. And you'll start going, I prefer italics, or I prefer the line to break like this, or whatever. Just start realizing that this is your thing and you don't really, you know, owe it to anybody but you.
Wow.
That was deep, I know.
That was really. Talk about deep dive.
Deep dive.
So on the next part of the resume, we can look forward to nuts and bolts.
Nuts and bolts.
We can look forward to the summary. We can look forward to a lot of different parts. I would say that this is going to be at least one more or two more parts.
Easy.
Make sure to look for that in our following episodes.
And for the kit, which I'm really hoping that the kit isn't going to be in the episode, but look for this kit thing that I'm trying to make so that you guys can maybe walk yourselves through this a little bit as well.
Yeah. Okay, moving on to fun segment. This is Book of the Week.
Book of the Week.
And this Book of the Week can be for general readers, people who just like reading, want to, you know, if you're trying to improve your English or trying to improve a different language.
But this is a job book.
But this is a career development book. This is very helpful. And so, Molly, tell me this about this book.
Well, I just love this book. It's called Ask a Manager
by
Allison Green. And it was published by Ballantine Books, but you can find this all over the Amazon, okay? You can find it everywhere. You can get it secondhand even. And it's a nice floppy book. It makes this sound. I like that, the floppiness. So it's really easy to play with and stuff. It's cool. Okay, so Ask a Manager. The thing is, this book arose from a column that this woman continues to write called, guess what? Ask a Manager. And people literally ask, you know, God, you know, about things that are both large and small, embarrassing and real, super hardcore business, like, oh, I want to get ahead of my job. And then also funny things like when I just opened it up a second ago, and you can witness how funny I thought this was. I just opened this book because I haven't read the whole thing. I've been flipping all through it, but I just happened to open it up. And there's this little thing from a reader, and it's called, I Accidentally Hugged the CEO.
Oh,
Lord. Oh, my God, so funny. So
it's these, like, I accidentally hugged the dean. It's
yes!
Like, oh, my gosh.
And the woman, the reader had written in and said, you know, she was holding the door open for the CEO, and he was trying, I guess, to open the door for her maybe, but reaching over her head in so doing. And so she just kind of went for the hug thing because it was, what did she call it? It's like a reflex. It's like the hug reflex. And so she, and then before she knew it, she'd hug this man. And oh my God. Anyway, so Allison is very sympathetic, and she herself says, this is so something that would happen to me. And she goes on to explain, you know, what to do. But this is, the book is full of things like this. Those are just little
cases. Questions. So questions that you as a new person, or even as a veteran.
Here's number 45. You're not inviting your coworkers to your wedding. Okay, that's one. But then, here's another one. And this is serious. And this kind of stuff happens. And you guys really, really, really need to know how to do this. Number 20, coworker keeps passive-aggressively CCing your manager on emails. Oh, man, we could talk about that for an hour.
That's going to be a whole nother episode.
That's a whole nother episode.
Email etiquette? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah, email etiquette. That's
going to be a whole deep dive.
That is a deep dive. And then related, number 21, coworker keeps going over your head rather than bringing concerns to you directly. So these
need this book.
You do need this book. Everybody needs this book. I love this book. So far, there hasn't really been anything in it that came as a surprise to me because I've been working for a really, really long time. And a lot of these things I've even done. I don't think I've really hugged anybody, but I might have done. But anyway, and so it was just, it's so useful, and it really does run the gamut. There's even a thing in there, and actually, this is what the book is called. Ask a Manager. How to Navigate Clueless Colleagues, Lunch-Stealing Bosses, and the Rest of Your Life at Work.
Wow.
Because your boss can very well steal your lunch. What do you do?
I don't know.
And I didn't actually read that one because I just thought that was funny. But, I mean, it's in here. And if I really want to know what to do, if my boss, who's lovely, who would never steal my lunch, but if he were to do that, then I would know what to do. So, anyway. This book is great, and I recommend it highly. And also, if you don't feel like hunkering down and buying the book right now, check out her her blog, which is just called Ask a Manager.
Or we can come steal it from your office.
You really can. You can borrow it from me, but you better bring it back because I will hunt you down like a dog.
Okay. 5 out of 5. 4 out of 5 stars.
Oh yeah, I think this is a 5 out of 5 for me, just because it's so practical and there's some humor in it and lots of good advice.
Awesome. Well, that brings us to the end of the episode. I want to thank you so much for listening, and I hope that you got a few laughs out of this, some good knowledge.
Was it funny this time?
I think so.
Okay.
I really think so. So I really hope you got those knowledge nuggets and that you enjoyed our deep dive. We want to thank you. This is from Loma Linda University, Nicole Hall, and I am Danielle Montoya, your producer in chief, and thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.